everyone. Welcome back to Relax with Animal Facts. I am Steph Wolf, and today I am going to be learning with you about our furry, scaly, or possibly even slimy friends. And in today's case, it is definitely going to be a scaly friend of ours, because we are covering the oh-so-wonderful orange clownfish. This, of course, is a very special listener episode dedicated to Emma, Annabelle, Affy, and Zelly. I hope I'm saying that last name correctly, but regardless, I hope you enjoy your very own episode. For more Relax with Animal Facts, I encourage you to come to the Patreon, patreon.com/relaxwithanimalfacts, or you can also click the Patreon link in the description. You can join and sign up for a free trial. There is no obligation. You can try it out. If you don't like it, that's fine. But it is through your support on Patreon that this show can even continue to run. So I thank those of you who support the show there, and for all those who will in the future. I also encourage you to subscribe to the YouTube channel, Relax with Animal Facts. I'm still working on one pretty big video, but there's one orangutan flap video I think that you guys would like. I also want to give a big shout out to George Vlad for the ambiances used in today's episode. His work is linked in the description, and you should check him out. And now, let us begin to wind down a little bit. If this is your first ever episode, I welcome you with open arms to our animal podcast family, and if you are returning, you know exactly what I am going to be asking of you. We always do a few things before we hop into the show, just to make sure we get the most out of it. I have three primary exhortations for you. The first is that you put on a pair of flippers and a wetsuit. We are certainly going to be needing those for where we are going today. My second encouragement to you is that you realize perhaps where you are carrying some tension. It might be in the neck, it might be in the shoulders, the face, the arms. Regardless of where it is that you carry tension, my exhortation to you is the same. Do your best to relax whatever it is that you are tensing. You can even bring up in your mind some Jell-O and do your best Oscar award-winning impression of it. I shall become green Jell-O this episode. If you aren't sure where you carry tension, which is entirely understandable, you can do a little exercise to find out. One technique called progressive muscle relaxation I find really helps. You can start from the bottom of your feet in your mind and just slowly scan up the body and relax as you go. That means that you would first relax the feet, then the calves, then the thighs, all the way up to the top of the head. This is a surefire way to become Jell-O, and it is an easy way to do an Oscar award-winning impression of it. My third exhortation to you is that you give your mind permission to wander and journey with me into a coral reef in Australia. Of course, it's Australia, where the orange clownfish resides. What else can I say besides welcome back, everyone? With the amount of times we have been to this continent, I'm pretty sure my bank account would be in the negatives. It's a good thing every time we travel together to Australia, I don't have to buy a plane ticket. The coral reefs here in Australia are seriously breathtaking. Regardless of the global conspiracy that has resulted in all of the cool animals being in Australia, there is still so much awe to be had. For those of you who are unsure what I am talking about, I have reasoned that because Australia has some of the most amazing animals in the world, a bunch of Aussies got together to transport all of the world's coolest animals to one place. Some might call this a conspiracy theory, I call it a spoiler alert. But we're not here to learn about global conspiracies, we're here to learn about the orange clownfish. The scientific name of this animal is Amphiprioninae pericola. This, of course, is compacted with Latin and Greek roots. The former portion of their name is a combination of three roots. Amphi, meaning both or around, prion, which is a Greek word for saw, referring to the serrated or saw-like appearance, and the last part, inai, is a common suffix used in zoological taxonomy to denote a subfamily. So the entire first part of their scientific name refers to a subfamily of fish characterized by traits suggested by the roots both, around, and saw-like. The latter portion of their scientific name, pericola, is derived from Latin. The exact etymology of the word pericola is not that straightforward, but it could be linked to pericus, which is related to fish, or possibly derived from periciformis, which is an order of fish. Their scientific name, when taken all together, means something like a subfamily of fish that has a saw-like appearance all around. And I would say that this is pretty accurate. These fish are carnivorous, and when they get together, like many other fish, their groups are called schools. They will live on average from between 6 to 10 years, and will grow to be an average of 4.3 inches, about the size of a teacup. Now let's get one important fact out of the way. Nemo is a fraud. The protagonists of Finding Nemo are false anemone fish, or false clownfish. The true anemone fish, or the orange clownfish, the animal we are learning about today, is not found in Finding Nemo. It's worth mentioning that the two species are virtually identical, but they do have some small form changes and live in various settings. So what I'm getting from this is that if the movie was renamed to Finding Clownfish, the movie would end within the hour and a half time span, but no clownfish would be found. The orange clownfish is a non-migratory species, meaning they do not migrate, and they inhabit tropical coastal lagoons and seaweed reefs at depths ranging from between 3 to 49 feet, about 1 to 15 meters. One of the most important things about the clown anemone fish is that they form symbiotic relationships with the anemones, particularly the anemones Heteractis crispa and Heteractis magnifica. They will interact with these anemones on the outer reefs, while they will interact with different anemones on shore reefs, particularly the Stichodactyla gigantea. These fish are called anemone fish for a reason. If we remember, there are different sorts of relationships between animals. There are symbiotic relationships, there are parasitic relationships, and let's remember that there are a few types of symbiotic relationships. If we want to break down that word symbiotic, we can break it down into two roots, the sim part and the biotic part. Sim is a word that refers to a coming together or a sharing of something. Biotic, of course, refers to the Greek root bios, which means life. So the interaction between different species are known as symbiotic relationships. These are described through relationships known as mutualism, commensalism, amensalism, parasitism, and competition. The relationships between different creatures and things in their environment are typically described through the benefits. Whether one species benefits, both benefit, neither benefit, maybe one benefits off of the other's harm, such as in a parasitic relationship. But the principle is that the entire world survives on relationships. The relationship between clownfish and the anemone is described in the following way. A clownfish will first undertake an elaborate dance with an anemone. It will begin first by softly running their body across the tentacles of the sea anemone, doing this until they are at ease with their host. The clownfish's skin is covered with mucus that helps to protect it from the fish-eating anemone's fatal sting. So, in exchange for protection from predators and food scraps, the clownfish repels intruders and cleans its host, eradicating parasites. There are 28 kinds of anemone fish, which come in a variety of hues, including pink, red, yellow, black, brown, and multicolored stripes. Allow me just to make one clarification, because I've been sitting here very confused, trying to figure it out. The clownfish that are featured in Finding Nemo are Oscillaris clownfish, or Amphiprion oscillaris. They are known as false Percola clownfish, but they are indeed still anemone fish. These are still considered to be clownfish and have a symbiotic relationship with sea anemones. So both the animal we are covering today and those special animals in the movie are types of anemone fish, but we are covering the true Percola clownfish. So I stand by my previous statement in saying that Nemo was a fraud. The dance that true clownfish do with the anemones help them to build immunity to the toxins that they have by gently brushing the tentacles with those various areas of their body. So in addition to having that protective layer of mucus, they also take that a bit slow. The layer of mucus will slowly accumulate, shielding the clownfish ultimately from the toxin. In terms of their diet, there are some that classify them as omnivorous, some as carnivorous. I suppose it could depend on the species of anemone fish. but they can eat zooplankton, worms, small crustaceans, and algae. One of the most interesting things about anemone fish is their ability to change from being male to female. According to National Geographic, all of them are born male and can alter their gender. According to National Geographic, all of the anemone fish are born male, but sometimes in the wild, two males will mate with the larger dominant fish, becoming the female. Once this process is complete, they cannot change back. And it is interesting that the dominant fish becomes the female because these fish dwell in groups that are matriarchal in their dominance hierarchy. That is to say that their groups are led by a dominant female. The second largest fish will be the dominating male, and the rest of the group consists of smaller males. If the female dies, the dominant male will transform into a female to replace her. The largest of these smaller males will eventually become the group's dominant male. So it seems like their hierarchy is pretty straightforward. I'm not sure how they determine who is dominant or not. Perhaps they just know and recognize it. I'm not entirely sure. But the clownfish within their communities will communicate by creating popping and clicking sounds, according to a study published in the journal PLOS-1. According to the researchers, the chatter serves to keep group members in their proper ranks. Sound is basically a strategy for preventing conflict between group members. If you didn't know that clownfish are quite sophisticated in their communication, it looks like they are. The orange clownfish has quite a bit of their own predators. Sharks, stingrays, and other larger bony fish consume them, while their eggs are particularly vulnerable to other sorts of predators. The warm tropical waters in which this species lives allows for year-round spawning. This refers to the bringing into the world new orange clownfish. Days before the spawning period will be marked by a shift of behavior in the males. They will expand their different fins and prepare the nest. The nest location is essential to the survival of the eggs. They're frequently found on a bare section of rock, protected by the host anemone's tentacles. The male cleans the naked rock with his mouth first, followed by the female. However, once spawning has occurred, male parental care is critical during the period when the eggs are vulnerable to predation. Spawning activity can continue anywhere from 30 minutes to more than 2 hours. The female will release eggs as she lightly brushes the surface. She is quickly then followed by the male, who fertilizes the eggs as they are released. The number of eggs can depend. Sometimes it will be 100, sometimes over 1,000. It depends on the size and age of the female. And these eggs are pretty tiny, about 3 to 4 millimeters in length. Incubation lasts a short 6 to 7 days, after which each egg produces a larva measuring from between 3 to 4 millimeters in total length. The freshly hatched larva sinks to the benthic environment before immediately swimming to the water's surface via a process known as phototaxis. This is a mechanism by which an animal uses light to orient itself. The larva then spends about a week with the plankton. In under 2 weeks, about 8 to 12 days after hatching, the juvenile anemone fish descends to the bottom in search of a host anemone. And then the cycle of life continues. Now, we could have been in a few different places in the world. We could have been as far north as southern Japan, but I chose Australia. I have to visit Australia one day myself. I must see the clownfish in person. Now let's move on to the name of the animal, clownfish. Where does it come from, or what does it mean? It is first worth mentioning that clownfish get their name from their bold, multicolored coloring, which is similar to the face paint and uniforms worn by clowns. But let's cover the word clown. Where does that come from, and what does it mean? This word was used as early as the 1560s, meaning a man of rustic or coarse manners, or a peasant. It is a word of obscure origin. There are a few things in Swedish, Low German, perhaps Icelandic, but the Oxford English Dictionary, probably the foremost authority in terms of words, at least for me, describes this word as a word meaning originally clod, clot, or lump, which, like those words themselves, has been applied in various languages to a clumsy person, or a lout. A lout is like a hooligan, a ruffian, a thug. So not such a nice origin. But in terms of the clownfish, it's not really reaching back to this original definition, but more to the sort of carnival-esque occupation that we come to know with the clown. Now let us move on to the dad joke. And before I say it, I'm sorry. Check this out. What do you call a fish with no eyes? A fsh. It's not really a joke that is a clownfish joke in specific. I actually sort of spared you. Although the clownfish has a sort of funny name, being a clown, its jokes made me nauseous, and so I thought them a bit too far to say here. I did, however, ask you guys for your own dad jokes on Spotify, specifically on the Dachshund or the Dachshund episode. Nina kicked off the joke competition with a "What do you put on a dachshund with a temperature?" Mustard. It's one of the best things to put on a hot dog. Nina also includes a fun fact. Apparently, in Germany, most people call them dackles instead of dachshunds. That is interesting. I will have to fact check with some of my German friends. I already have my script prepared. Hallo, wie geht es dir? Wie nennt man den Dachshund? That is to say, hey, how are you? What do you call the dachshund? I don't have time to small talk. Tell me the truth. Another dad joke was given by a username who has named themselves Hacking McDonald's Wi-Fi. A real Robin Hood-like character. Hacking McDonald's Wi-Fi says, "What's a dachshund's favorite holiday?" Halloweener. I'm sorry to inform you, but you're going to jail. Not only for hacking McDonald's Wi-Fi, but for that joke. That's a good one. Claire Snowy wrote, "What is a sausage dog's favorite perfume?" Sauvage. For those of you that need context, Sauvage is a male perfume from Dior, but Claire wrote it as Sauvage. I would love to see a commercial for the Dior Sauvage new perfume. Do you want to smell like a wiener dog? We have the perfume for you. I won't do an impression of the commercials just so I don't wake anyone up, but it's taking every muscle in me to not do that. On Instagram, I asked you guys which dog breed was the best and why. Tegan Capri 09 wrote, Samoyeds, they are so fluffy like polar bears. All of this was in all capital letters, and so I imagine Tegan was screaming at this point. I agree because Samoyeds are one of the only breeds that are guaranteed to give you carpal tunnel syndrome. You have to brush those things for like 8 hours a day. So if the question was, which dog breed is the best at giving you carpal tunnel, Samoyeds would definitely be at the top of the list. Nick Naste said, Jack Russell Terrier. That's just a good one. I have no jokes to make. Regan Hulvey said, Blue Heelers, because I have one and am biased. They're loyal, live long lives, and have a big personality. I have noticed that those with blue heelers seem to be among the most vocal of any dog breed owner ever. I feel like blue heeler owners are the kinds that will go door to door to ask if they want to see their blue heeler. Maybe have some brochures made up and toss it around the neighborhood. Maybe leave a couple at a bus stop. There has to be a group chat or like a Discord. The last bit of correspondence I have with you guys is through the Apple Podcasts review section. L53814 wrote all the way from the United States of America saying, Hi, I listened to this podcast a couple of weeks ago and don't know why I stopped listening. I love the smooth voice and the music of it. I just wish we could get more information about the animals. The animals that you picked are amazing. This is one of the best calm animal podcasts ever. Thanks for this podcast and good luck on future episodes. Thank you, L5, for the very wonderful review. The statement that this is one of the best calm animal podcasts ever sort of implies that there are others. Is there another Relax with Animal Facts out there somewhere? Perhaps, I don't know. But I'm so happy you came back to the show, L5, and that, hopefully, you are here to stay. We have so many facts left to learn about. You may have stopped listening around the time I pulled what many young people call a pro-gamer move and decided to effectively ruin the entire intention of the show through ads, that is, through outside advertisement. Looking back now, that was a terrible idea, and hopefully we can get some better forms of support. So that is entirely possible. Again, I'm sorry for that. If you would like to request an animal for a future episode, you can go to relaxwithanimalfacts.com and go to the Submit and Animal Request tabs. If you would like to reach out to me, Steph Wolf, for any other reason, you can do so by sending an email to relaxwithanimalfacts@gmail.com or by sending a message to relaxwithanimalfacts on Instagram. I encourage all of you to follow the show on Spotify or subscribe on Apple Podcasts if you're listening through there. Clicking that follow button is a huge way of showing the show support and answering the Q&As, leaving reviews, all of those things are good things. It helps the show grow, and it helps the show get better. For more Relax with Animal Facts and to support its mission, you can go to patreon.com/relaxwithanimalfacts. A huge shout out to George Vlad for the ambiances used in today's episode. His work is linked in the description and you should check him out. The facts used in this episode came from nationalgeographic.com, livescience.com, floridamuseum.ufl.edu, and etimonline.com. What an amazing animal we have learned about today. An animal that has formed such a strange and unique relationship with the anemone. An organism that kills fish, but with the clownfish creates a symbiotic relationship that is mutually beneficial. I again hold steadfastly, dogmatically, that Nemo was a fraud. That is a hashtag for sure. Hashtag Nemo was a fraud. If Finding Nemo was renamed to Finding a Real Clownfish, it could be 50 hours long, and the movie wouldn't have a proper ending. I'm not sure why I all of a sudden have developed a hostility for Finding Nemo. I loved that movie. But anyways, let's roll with it. Thank you so much for taking the time to join me on this adventure, and I look forward to the next adventure together with the next animal. Take care.